John Roger once said, "Banks do not create money for the public good. They are businesses owned by private shareholders. Their purpose is to make a profit." Consider this scenario for a second. You go to your bank to withdraw your money. The teller tells you, "Sorry, sir, sorry, ma'am, there is no money." The government was slow to even let the population know that the country is financially bankrupt. Retirees can't get their pensions. The government cannot pay officers, military, and first responders, among others. Basic commodities prices become so expensive, and the money you are left with is worthless. The world is frantically searching for an alternative to the collapse of the US dollar. This scenario can become a reality, one that demands your attention and that of investors, retirees, industrialists, capitalists, the young and the old, and anyone in between. In this video, I am going to share with you my insights and assessments about what implications the global financial system is facing as the journey of the US dollar hegemony is in decline, given the shifting sand of the global geopolitical order. Our show today is sponsored by Noble Gold. My name is Dr. David Walalu, and you are watching Geopolitics in Conflict.
It was the biggest shock to the U.S. banking sector in over a decade and a half. Silicon Valley Bank, previously the country's 16th largest lender, and Signature Bank collapsed.
Shares in Credit Suisse fell by more than 60% this morning after European markets opened, and the value of banking shares across Europe has dropped sharply.
The world economy is hooked to the dollar. Now it wants to give up this addiction, but it'll not happen overnight. The dollar's downfall, though, has begun.
Here is brief background. Just to put things in perspective, beside the failure of three U.S. banks, another high-profile failure like Credit Suisse is sending a strong signal about the upcoming failure of the financial system. The question is, will the central bank keep failing institutions on life support? If so, who's paying for it? One thing is sure, the geopolitical consequences will be enormous. The stop of dollar credit will accelerate the shift to a multipolar reserve system with advantage to China's renminbi as a competitor to the US dollar. So if I am to analyze this, I will look at it this way. Gold, which is, by the way, disliked by none other than John Maynard Keynes, who was, by the way, an English economist and philosopher whose ideas fundamentally changed the theory and practice of macroeconomics and the economic policies of government. So gold will play a bigger role because the dollar banking system is dysfunctional and no other currency, surely not the tightly controlled renminbi, can replace it as of now. Now, near a record price of $2,000 an ounce, gold is likely to rise further. Now, a word from our sponsor. Noble Gold Investments have made it their mission to stay on top of the most important economic news. Three bank runs in the last month. These are the second largest and third largest runs in history. The government is taking steps to guarantee all deposits. That means more money printing. Plus, the Fed is sitting on unrealized losses of $1.2 trillion on $8.3 trillion bond portfolio. And the Fed will continue to raise interest rate even if they tank the economy. Do you know who are the only ones not afraid? The ones that are invested in gold with Noble Gold Investments. Gold is the most stable asset outside of any government control. Thousands have approached Noble Gold Investments to get their hands on gold. Hurry and go to geopoliticsgold.com to secure your wealth now. Bag a free 5-ounce America, the beautiful coin, with each gold or silver IRA if you qualify. Once again, geopoliticsgold.com. That's geopoliticsgold.com. There is always risk with investments, and there are no guarantee of any kind. Now back to our topic. The greatest danger to dollar hegemony and the strategic power that it conveys to Washington is not China's ambition to expand the international role of RMB. Rather, the danger comes from the exhaustion of the financial mechanisms that made it possible for the U.S. to run up a negative $18 trillion net foreign asset position during the last three decades. This crisis is utterly unlike 2008, when banks levered up trillions of dollars of dodgy assets based on liar's loans to homeowners. 15 years ago, the credit quality of the banking system was rotten, and leverage was out of control. Some would say bank credit quality today is the best in generation. The crisis stems from the now impossible task of financing America's ever-expanding foreign debt. It is also the most anticipated financial crisis in history. In 2018, the Bank of International Settlements, sort of the central bank for central banks, warned that $14 trillion of short-term dollar borrowing of European and Japanese banks used to hedge foreign exchange risk were a time bomb waiting to explode. In March 2020, dollar credit seized up in a run for liquidity when the COVID lockdown began, provoking a sudden need for the bank financing. The Federal Reserve put out the fire by opening multi-billion dollar swap lines to foreign central banks. Similarly, the dollar balance sheet of the world banking system exploded, as gauged by the volume of overseas claims in the global banking system. This opened a new vulnerability, namely counterparty risk, or the exposure of banks to enormous amounts of short-term loans to other banks. America's chronic current account deficits of the past three decades amount to an exchange of goods for paper. America buys more goods than it sells, and sells assets like stock, bonds, real estate, and so on to foreigners to make up the difference. Heck, we even had to borrow money from China to make up the difference. America now owes a net $18 trillion to foreigners. The trouble is that the foreigners who own U.S. assets receive cash flows in dollars but need to spend money in their own currencies. With floating exchange rate, the value of the dollar cash flow in euros, Japanese yen, or Chinese renminbi is uncertain. Foreign investors need to hedge their dollar income, that is, sell US dollar short against their own currencies. That's why the size of the foreign exchange derivatives market ballooned along with America's liabilities to foreigners. The mechanism is simple. If you are receiving dollars but pay in euros, you will sell dollars against euros to hedge your foreign exchange risk. But your bank has to borrow the dollar and lend them to you before you can sell them. Foreign banks borrowed perhaps $18 trillion from U.S. banks to fund these hedges. That creates a gigantic vulnerability. If a bank looks dodgy, as did Credit Suisse earlier this month, banks will pull credit line in a global run. And yet there is the big elephant in the room, gold. But let me give you a little history here. Before 1971, when central banks maintained exchange rate at a fixed level and the U.S. covered its relatively small current account deficit by transferring gold to foreign central banks at a fixed price of $35 an ounce, none of this was necessary. Even before, on January 5, 1933, the United States won off the gold standard, a monetary system in which currency is backed by gold, when Congress enacted a joint resolution nullifying the right of creditors to demand payments in gold. The United States has been on the gold standard since 1879, except for an embargo on gold exports during World War I. But Banks' failures during the Great Depression of the 1930s frightened the public into hoarding gold, making the policy unattainable. Soon after taking office in March 1933, President Roosevelt declared nationwide bank moratorium in order to prevent a run on banks by consumers lacking confidence in the economy. He also forbade banks to pay out gold or to export it. According to Keynesian economic theory, one of the best ways to fight off an economic downturn is to inflate the money supply. And increasing the amount of gold held by the Federal Reserve would in turn increase its power to inflate the money supply. Facing similar pressures, Britain had dropped the gold standard in 1931, and Roosevelt had taken note. On April 5, 1933, Roosevelt ordered all gold coins and gold certificates in denominations of more than $100 turned in for other money. It required all persons to deliver all gold coins, gold bullion, and gold certificates owned by them to the Federal Reserve by May 1st of that year for the set price of $20.67 an ounce. By May 10th of that year, the government had taken in $300 million of gold coin and $470 million of gold certificate. 2 months later, a joint resolution of Congress revoked the gold clauses in many public and private obligations that required the debtor to repay the creditor in gold dollars of the same weight and fineness of those borrowed. In 1934, the government price of gold was increased to $35 per ounce, effectively increasing the gold on the Federal Reserve balance sheet by 69%. This increase in assets allowed the Federal Reserve to further inflate the money supply. The government held the $35 an ounce price until August 15, 1971, when President Richard Nixon announced that the U.S. would no longer convert dollars to gold at a fixed value, thus completely abandoning the gold standard. In 1974, President Gerald Ford signed legislation that permitted Americans again to own gold bullion. The end of the gold link to the dollar and the new regime of floating exchange rates allowed the United States to run massive current account deficits by selling its assets to the world. The population of Europe and Japan was aging faster than the US and had a correspondingly greater need for retirement assets. That arrangement is now coming to a messy end. One fail-safe gauge of global system risk is the price of gold, and especially the price of gold relative to alternative hedges against unexpected inflation. Starting in 2022, however, gold rose while the price of Treasury inflation-protected security known as TIPS fell. And TIPS, by the way, are bonds issued by the U.S. government that offer protection against inflation in addition to modest interest payments. The dollar reserve system will go out not with a bang, but a whimper. The central banks will step in to prevent any dramatic failures, but banks' balance sheets will shrink, credit to the real economy will diminish, and international lending in particular will evaporate. At the margin, local currency financing will replace dollar credit. We have already seen this happen in Turkey, whose currency imploded during 2019-2021 as the country lost access to dollar and euro financing. Where does China fit in all this, you may ask? To an important extent, Chinese trade financing replaced the dollar and supported Turkey's remarkable economic turnaround of the past year. Southeast Asia will rely more on its own currencies and the renminbi. And surprisingly, in a recent meeting in Indonesia, ASEAN finance ministers and central bank governors discussed how to slash down the dependence on major currencies. ASEAN considers dropping the US dollar, the euro, the yen, Japanese yen that is, and the British pound from financial transactions. Instead, they collectively intend to foster settlements via local currencies. India to drop the US dollar in cross-border trade. Saudi Arabia switched to Chinese yuan renminbi instead of the dollar in its trade with China, Iraq, Brazil, and others follow suit. So here's my conclusion for you. What the United States and collective West did not factor in is that Western sanctions on Russia during the past year prompted China, Russia, India, the Persian Gulf states, Brazil, Iran, and others to find alternative financing arrangements. These are monetary phenomena working around the US dollar banking system. The truth is that these alternative arrangements will turn into a permanent features of the monetary landscape, and other currencies will continue to gain ground against the US dollar. As always, prepare yourself for a changing world order. Till next time, guys. Bye-bye.